ॐ परमसाय सन्धिबोधिधाम भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिधाम पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं सम्बद्ध्वामनुसन्धतामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणीम्। I thought we did number 7 last week.
Yeah, we did. Did we complete it? I have notes on it.
We'll start there for Penny.
What is it?
Is that
Penny's favorite verse?
We'll start on 7, okay. Just to review.
Penny says.
Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu Mamanusmara yudhya cha Mayarpita mano buddhi Mame vaishasya samshayaha Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhya cha mayi arpita mano buddhihi mam eva aishasi asamshayaha that yakara is the ena. In the previous two verses of 5 and 6, Krishna's telling Arjuna, at the time of death, when the body is dropped, for those who think of me, means for those who recognize me, who know me. So he's talking about the jnanis in verse 5. For those who think of me, who recognize me, who know me, they definitely go to my own being. Of this, there is no doubt. And the reason for that, which she's going to develop now in this other verse, the reason for that is that the one that you're thinking of and the one that you are is the same. Right? The Brahman that you're thinking of, which is the self of Krishna, right, is yourself. And so if you know that self at the time of death, if your mind is awake to that self, which is Brahman, which is the self of Krishna, that is the self that you'll go to at the time of death, because there's no difference. There's no going, actually. There's no ajnanam there, and so the self that you're recognizing at the time of death is the self that you are. And so he says, you definitely become my mud bhava, my own being. Why? Because you are my own being. You become my own being because you are my own being. There's no ajnana there, there's no ignorance there.
Excuse me, do you mind speaking a little louder?
I'll try. Sorry, huh?
Oh.
Okay. I'll see if I can.
What was that last sentence?
The mud bhava means my own being. So, he who have it thinking of me, remembering me, right? Remembering me, he who leaves this body, that person goes to my own being. So they say Priyati, he goes to my being. He goes, he says, for this, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt that he will go to my being, Madhavam. How can he go to my being? Right? How can there be no doubt? Because the person who knows me is me, right? The person, there's no going really. The ajnanam has been removed, the ignorance has been removed. And so already before the person leaves the body, they already are me, right? Because the ajnanam is gone. And so if that knowledge is there when this body drops, definitely they go to me rather than transmigrating. Means the whole, the physical body, the sukshma sharira, the subtle body all go. They go back into their elements. Because there's no ahankara to keep the sukshma sharira going. The ahankara, the I notion, resolves into the atma. Because in fact, for the jivan mukta, the ahankara already, the ahankara is mithya. For the jivan mukta, the only reason the ahankara is even there is because the body and the sukshma, the subtle body is there because of the prarabdha karma. The prarabdha karma hasn't fulfilled itself yet, hasn't completed itself. But when the body drops, the sukshma sharira has no more purpose. Right, because there's no ahankara that's identified with the sukshma sharira, the subtle body either. And so the physical body, just like the physical body goes back to its elements, the subtle body goes back to its subtle elements, and the ahankara, which is already resolved in the self, right, already for the jnani, the ahankara is only nitya. It's only there as a shell. When the body drops, that vritti doesn't have any meaning at all. It's just subsumed into the atma. And so when they say that that person goes to me, it means that the subtle body and the physical body now don't have any other place to land. So they it's like saying they resolve into my being. And so for the jivan mukta, I just am Ishwara. I just am Brahman. I am Brahman who is Ishwara. There's no more jiva left. But now in this verse 7, in this verse 6, then he says, in fact, for at the time of death, this is going to be true even for the ajnani, they will also become what they're thinking about, in a sense. He says, whatever for an ajnani, whatever at the time of death they think about when the body is when the body is dropped, it is that alone that they go toward. Those people who, when it says bhava, teb bhava bhavitaha, that means in this life, what you spend your time and your energy and your actions, what are they focused on? Where is your commitment as a jiva in this life? What are you committed to? Are you committed to money? Are you committed to going to Swarga Loka? Are you committed to going to a particular plane of existence? Are you, what is the commitment? What is the most important to you in this life, in terms of not only your samskaras, your thinking, but also your action? So whatever you are working toward in this life and whatever you're committed to, when this body, at the time that this body drops, those are the samskaras that you'll be left with. Mm. You can't fake that. You can't fake it, because it is really what is important to you. You can't just bring what your mind is going to, you can't help your mind from going to what is the highest value for you. And so at the time of death, the things that are of lesser value, of lesser importance, will not be what you're focused on. You'll be focused on what you are most attached to. And so even if your whole family is sitting around you on your deathbed, you know, chanting Rama, 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 Krishna, 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 Rama, Rama, Krishna, something in order to try to get the name of the Lord, you know, into your mind at the time of the death, that'll just be kind of background music for you. The vritti that will be there is the vritti that is your samskara. Mm-hmm. It is what you're committed to, and it's that vritti that carries you on to your next life. Right? For jivan mukta, the mind naturally resolves into Brahman, because there's nothing but Brahman. It's not that you don't have other thoughts. But all of the, for jivan mukta, all of the thoughts are mithya. Yourself is what is predominant in any given thought. The atma is predominant in every thought. The thoughts are mithya. That's not where your commitment is. Your commitment is to Ishvara, to Brahman. To Ishvara, whose self is Brahman. That's where the heart of the jnani is. Because that's where the ananda is. That's the source of the ananda. You can say, another way you can say it is that for a person when they're on their deathbed, their mind is going to go toward that to which they are most committed. every human being is most committed to ananda. What am I most attached to? That which gives me fullness, that which gives me joy. If I believe that going to Indraloka is going to give me ananda, joy, and that is my commitment then, you know? If my love object is a person or a pet or whatever it is, if that's my love object, if that's what gives me the most joy, if that's been my source of happiness, right, then that's where my mind will go to. Right? And so for a samsari, your source of happiness, your commitment is always toward your source of happiness. But the source of happiness can be, like especially in the Hindu tradition, it can be doing all kinds of rituals and upasanas so that I can get to Indraloka, or that I can get to Swargaloka. Or for somebody who is very committed to wealth, they're committed to wealth because their wealth gives them a sense of security or a sense of power or a sense of meaning, you know, and so their commitment is to the accrual of wealth because they know that the wealth will give me security and will give me power and will give me respect and all of these type of things, you know, which will give me happiness, right? Which will give me well-being. And so whatever is primary for the person in terms of their well-being, in terms of the ananda, such an ananda, my fullness, my wholeness, that's where the mind goes to. And for a jnani, the mind already has gone there. Because for the jnani, the one wants that, jnani means jivan mukta, where you have nishta. Your mind is already assimilated that the source of ananda is Brahman, is the self. That is the source of ananda, so the mind is already attached there. In fact, as we're maturing in the light of this knowledge, what happens is our attachments to all of these different things in the world, this will make me happy and I need this to be happy, those attachments, you get ripped off of us one by one. They're dropped off one by one by one. And as we let go of each one, then those that particular arena doesn't grab my mind anymore. It doesn't make its presence or absence, or they're like helium balloons. It's fine when it's there, it's fine when it's not there. It has nothing to do with my ananda. That's the maturing of vairagya. And it's the maturing of vairagya in the light of my knowledge, where I go on as I mature, recognizing that the only source of ananda, really, in truth, is the self, is myself. You know, and all of the others are illusory and therefore sources of pain. They're what we call dukkha yonis, wounds of dukkha. Right? They're all wounds of dukkha, because for one thing, none of them really has the ananda, and for another thing, they're all time bound. So they'll cause or give me sukha at some point times and dukkha at other times. And as I go on maturing, I keep letting it go, letting it go, letting it go, letting it go, because it's not a real contribution to my well-being. It's an illusory contribution to my well-being, and therefore source of dukkha. So that's the maturing process. In fact, just think about it. The things that were at one point a great attachment to you caused suffering. Once you let it go, that thing is still there. You can still enjoy its presence or absence, but it's simply not a cause of suffering. You're objective toward it. It no longer has the power to produce suffering for you. And the reason for that is that you've taken the ananda off it and given it, you've taken the projection of ananda off of it and given it back to yourself. You've re-owned the ananda. And now this thing is still there, but without the hook of being a source of happiness. And so that's why when all of these different sources of happiness that we have, because we come into this life with so much baggage, one by one we have to analyze them in the light of our knowledge. And it's basically, do I really need this to be happy? In what ways do I feel that this is necessary for my well-being? How does this really contribute to my well-being? How, in fact, is it hurting me? What is it actually doing to me? And what is it in the light of the truth? And so you can, we practice letting go. Letting them be and letting go. Letting it go doesn't mean getting rid of it. It means letting go of the attachment, the illusion of ananda having to do with that particular object or that particular quest for some sort of status, you know, some status, something to make me feel better about myself. We just keep letting it go, letting it go, letting it go, letting it go. And that's, but you can't let it go without knowledge, that's the thing. Otherwise, that's a phony thing. Let's try to let these things go without knowledge. It doesn't work. What works is the recognition that the real source of ananda is my being, kind of understanding the truth of that, and understanding how this particular attachment is causing me pain. It's not worth it. I mean, that's what it is for me. It's always, this isn't worth it. It's not worth it. It's not worth the pain. What would it be like to just let it go? And if my mind gets in any trouble like that, I do that. This is causing pain. What for? Can I let it go? And then I'll sit there and I'll just imagine myself letting it go. And it's such a relief. You let it go and your mind is clean. Mm. You know? Mm. And so whenever the mind gets sullied like that, you look at it and you say, do I need this? Do I really need this? And I'm talking about doing this with the things that are the most important to you, because they cause the most pain. You know, the ones and the people and the situations that you're the most attached to. Do I need this person to be in this particular way? Do I need this situation to be in this particular way? You let go and you let go and you let go. So that's what allows for this, when Krishna says in the first verse, definitely that person, that Jivanmukta, comes to me. It's the one for whom, when the body drops, the commitment is toward the Brahman. That's the commitment. But what you're really saying, that's what I want to make clear in these two verses, the commitment is ananda. But the thing is that the ananda is united with the source rather than projected out onto something else. For the samsari, their commitment is going to be wherever their ananda is, really is, and what they've been working for, that what they believe will make them happy. So, and that's where they will go, barring no papa karmas that get in the way and make a mess out of that. You don't take you there in your next life with all kinds of obstacles to torch you around this thing that you really want. Those would be the papa karmas. Swamiji talks about that in his bhasha. You know, just think about it. You have a tremendous desire, say, for wealth. And you've spent this life working for accruing wealth, accruing wealth, accruing wealth. And along the way, you've also done your share of papa karmas. And so, but that is your highest commitment. And so in your next birth, you can imagine, you will have a birth that is spent, you know, in situations where you will accrue wealth. But then you have the papa karmas to worry about. That'll come in and thwart your efforts. That type of thing, he mentions that. But it makes sense, right? So that's why he says, you know, within samsara there is no guarantee, you know. There's a guarantee in the sense of going toward what your commitment is. But, you know, your karmas also, the punya and papa karmas can thwart your efforts. He says a few lines about that. So anyway, here, this verse now says, Krishna says, Tasmat. He says, therefore, since you're going to go toward your commitment, towards your ananda, he says, therefore, sarveshu kaleshu, at all times, in all situations, meaning all the seasons, in day and night, You know, at all the different, in all different situations, in all times, Mam Anusmara. Mam means me. Anusmara means remember me. Think of me. When you say Anu, it means think of me after. The after means think of me in light of the Shastra. Think of me in light of your knowledge. Right? Think of me after you've done the Shravana and the Shravana, the Manana, Nididhyasana. Now that you understand me, because Krishna's been unfolding his nature to Arjuna. So now that you know me, knowing me, understanding me as I am according to the Shastra, remember me, think of me that way all of the time, and thinking of me in that way, then may you fight. Because Arjuna's a Kshatriya and he's there in the middle of the battlefield. He's going to go into a big war now. But for us, the idea is you are in your situation, your dharma. This is your dharma. Your life is your dharma. And so in your situation, doing your duty, think of me, remember me as Ishwara, the Ishwara that I'm unfolding to you. Remember me in all of the situations at all times while you're doing your duty. How do you do that? He says, Mayi arpita mano buddhi. Being one whose mind, whose buddhi, whose manas and buddhi are devoted to me. So Swamiji also has a nice section on this. Mayi means arpita, means your mind is devoted to me. And what does that mean? Manas here means, okay, let's look at it like this. In all the time, as your prarabdha, as your karmas are unfolding for you, situation after situation after situation, this is Ishwara. This is just the objective reality that you find yourself in. This situation. Every situation comes with a given sankalpa, Ishwara sankalpa. The Ishwara sankalpa is the duty, the dharma, that's enjoined by the situation. In other words, every situation calls upon you for a particular type of action. What is your dharma in that situation? What is the situation called? What does the situation call upon you to do? In other words, what Swamiji will say here, and what Shankara is saying, the situation comes with its dharma. Okay, that means that there's a duty that's part of the order, Ishwara's order of the situation. So there's the situation, and there's the Ishwara sankalpa that comes with the situation, which is what we call the dharma. The dharma itself is from Ishwara. Okay? Now on top of that, the situation, which is Ishwara, is going to be your sankalpa. That's what we mean by manas here, your sankalpa. And the example Swamiji uses is, say for instance, in this Mahabharata war, Duryodhana has misbehaved in this war to bring about. Duryodhana and his group have misbehaved in order which brought about this war. So now this war has been brought about. And it's Arjuna's duty to fight in the war. That's the dharma. Right? So there's no way around that. That's Arjuna in his position as a Kshatriya is bound to fight this war. That's Ishwara Sankalpa. Okay? Now Arjuna is thinking, I don't want to fight this war because of my family, having to kill all of my family and my teachers. I would rather become a sannyasi. And this is what he says, I'd rather become a sannyasi and go to the forest than fight this war. That is Arjuna sankalpa. That's the manas. Arjuna has to offer his sankalpa over to Bhagavan, to Ishwara, and follow the Ishwara sankalpa. So he has to lay his sankalpa at the feet of Ishwara. because his sankalpa is going against the Dharma. In fact, Krishna says throughout, okay, now Arjuna, do you understand? So now get up and fight. No, get up and fight. Go do that. This is your Dharma. This is what's being called upon you to do here. I've explained the situation to you. Now go and fight. So Arjuna actually has to give up his personal sankalpa to do what's being asked by him by the Dharma, by Ishwara. That's the manas. The buddhi here is Arjuna's, in this sense, Arjuna's kartvic form, his sense of doership, his sense of ahankara, as though he is the one doing, that ahankara also has to be offered up to Ishwara. And in fact, in the second chapter, right at the near the beginning, after Krishna starts teaching him, he says, you know, you think that you're going to die, or these kings are going to die, or I'm going to die. In fact, there's nobody dies. I know that and you don't, right? Nobody's going to die, right? You think they're going to die, or you think that you have something to do with all of this, or that you're going to kill them, you know? But in fact, you're neither the killer nor the killed. It's all these virtues that are going on like this. There is no real kartritvam. If there's any kartritvam, it's Bhagavan himself. And so here, it's a resolving of the karta, the doer, the ahankara, as well as the ishwara, as well as the jiva sankalpa. So giving up that sankalpa, just simply doing your dharma, you know, and devoting yourself to me in that way, giving up the ahankara and the jiva sankalpa, then thinking of me, you know, recognizing me means this is Ishwara, and the Atma is Brahman, this is Ishwara. So always recognizing me and having and following me in terms of your doing your duty, doing your dharma, the dharma that is intrinsic to the situation, and laying your ahankara and your private and your personal sankalpas at my feet. Do the dharma that is intrinsic to Ishwara's order, that is intrinsic to my being. If you do that, he says, definitely, asamshaya, without any doubt, you will come to me. You will come to me without, there's no doubt about it, you will come to me. Why? Because you already are me. You are me, so definitely you will come to me. The problem here is just one of clarity of knowledge. And so to get this clarity of knowledge, there's three things that are involved here to get the clarity that Arjuna needs, that we all need. The first problem that we all have is what's called avarana. There's ajnana. Krishna's removing Arjuna's ajnana, his ignorance. He's teaching thoroughly. Right? So it's the shravana manana nididhyasana is going to remove the ajnana, right? The ignorance. That's the avarana. Next problem, though, is what we call mala. The impurities that you've brought with you, you know, papa karmas that are creating obstructions here in this life that you've brought with you, and raga dvesha, your likes and dislikes. So these are creating obstructions, lack of vairagya, I need this to be a certain way, I relate to the world in a way that causes me a lot of pain. Yeah. I have the complexes that I have that I need to learn how to deal with, and the likes and dislikes I have in reference to the world, all of that I need to handle with karma yoga. And the karma yoga that we spent so much time in, that karma yoga has to be turned outward and inward. And all of the wrong situations, you know, all of my likes and dislikes, all boils down to likes and dislikes. I need things to be a particular way. All of those things have to be neutralized, and I neutralize that through the karma yoga. Those are called the mulas. The third thing is what we call vikshepa. Vikshepa really is the mental agitation. It's agitation. It's the unsteadiness of the mind. So we've got the mula and vikshepa. The vikshepa, I mean, the what's causing all of the agitation in the mind or the unsteadiness of mind, there are also techniques to help that. And so, and this is what Shankar is going to get into. One of the techniques for helping make the mind steady is upasana. And Swamiji talks a little bit about upasana, and these verses that we're going to go into talk about upasana. Upasana and nididhyasana, both upasana and nididhyasana, bring about what's called chitta nischalya. Nischalya means, chala means movement. Nischala means free of movement. The mind, because of associative thinking, is often just traveling all around. One thought generates the next thought, generates the next thought. One thing, like, for instance, say if I have a negative thought, that will engender another negative thought and another negative thought and another negative thought, and my mind will just naturally build up a web. Because that's the mind. It's always one thought is generating another thought, another thought, another thought, another thought, and the mind just goes on like that. There's no steadiness of mind. And I'm also not used to bringing the mind back, right? Once I recognize how the mind is that one thought, it's like a bouncing ball. One thought leads to the next. And so if I start on a chain of thinking, it'll just go on ad infinitum until I stop it. And so I need to recognize these certain qualities that the mind is like this, and then learn how to pull the mind back, to hold the mind steady. When we do upasana, and I'll talk about the couple different types of upasana for a minute. When I do upasana, what I'm actually doing is practicing holding the mind, stopping this type of free-floating associative thinking, you know, the natural unsteadiness of the mind. And so what in the whole kind of a Vedic tradition, there are many, many different forms of upasana. But basically what the upasana involves, as opposed to nididhyasana, when I'm just resolving my mind into the self, what it really involves is having some form of Ishwara, usually some form of Ishwara, which I am superimposing upon something else. Like, for instance, I could take a form of Ishwara, even say a form of Ishwara as Shiva, the form of Shiva, and I could superimpose that form of Shiva even on my mind which is lesser, right? So I could take a form of the Lord and superimpose that form on the mind, so I would focus on my mind and imagine my mind as Shiva. Or I could even focus on an object or a saligrama, a stone. I could take a stone and focus on that stone and imagine that particular stone as Vishnu.
How do you imagine the mind to be Shiva?
Well, if I take the mind, if I imagine my sitting there as my own mind, as kind of a something which is capable of imagination, of creating a world, you know? And I just think of that mind as Shiva, as the Lord. I imagine that mind in the form of Shiva, for instance, or I imagine it just as the Lord. And then I let the mind be Ishwara then. So then I just sit with the mind and I watch the mind and I imagine that my mind as Ishwara, as the Lord. That's the type of upasana. Or I take like a stone, or it can even be some mustard. It's some mustard and imagine Ganesha on that. So I'm taking a lesser object and superimposing a form of the Lord on that object, and then I'm holding it there. I'm holding my mind there. So that's a discipline. The discipline to hold the mind and on that, to focus the mind on that. And the mind builds a lot of strength. Now say I'm focusing Ishwara on the mind itself. I'm holding that image of the Lord on the mind itself. And when the mind breaks away, I bring it back. I bring it back to the Vipassana. When it breaks away, I bring it back and I hold it. Breaks away, I bring it back. And so I learn by doing the Vipassana, not only am I gaining some punya, in fact, from the meditation on Ishwara, that meditation, in fact, that Vipassana, in fact, can lead me as an adrishta pola, as a secondary, I mean, an unseen result, it can give me punya and lead to the experience of other worlds, if I were other lokas, if I were samsari. But the immediate drishta pola is that I learn how to control my mind, how to hold my mind, how to bring my mind back. Because if I have a practice like this, what am I doing? I'm holding it, bringing it back, holding it, bringing it back, holding it. So that's Vipassana brings about this strength of mind that can help me to bring it back.
Rips.
Yeah, yes, rips, exactly. That's exactly right. Now, if I'm doing karma yoga and doing all of this inner child work and all of these type of things that we do for antikarma shuddhi, that to get rid of the mola, to get rid of the impurity, that also brings about a peace and a steadiness of mind. It brings about a peace of mind. But that combined with the upasana, right, brings about a very steady, a very quiet mind. So it's just approaching the same thing from two ends, and both help each other. So this, Krishna is going to be talking about some things that can be taken as upasana or can be taken as nididhyasana. Now for the upasana, I just talked about, first of all, this what we call samputti upasana. And that's where I'm taking a form of Ishwara and using it and contemplating, superimposing it on something else, like my mind or on Saligrama or on a Ganesha on some pile of mustard. These are upasanas. There's what's called ahangraha upasana, which is interesting. It's very close to nididhyasana. That's where when I think of myself, ahangraha means the aham, the ahankara. And what I do is on me, the one who's meditating, not a jnani, but as an upasaka. Here I am, the meditator. So I'm sitting with myself, the one who's meditating, so me, the conscious being, the I, still there's ajnana there, but the I. And I'm superimposing on me Ishwara. Not superimposing on, like, on the mind or on an object. I'm superimposing on the I thought itself, where I would say I just, and all I mean by that, because from the standpoint of ajnana, I, the meditator, the one who is the upasaka, the one who's doing the meditation, I sit there and I imagine myself as Ishwara. So what happens is that the Ishwara, your vritti, your understanding of Ishwara, right? You imagine yourself as that. It's called ahangraha upasana. Or you imagine yourself as Ishwara, as Shiva, or as Vishnu. You know? So it would be, instead of, it's not nididhyasana. Nididhyasana is when you're recognizing the truth of yourself, which is Brahman, which is Ishwara. That nididhyasana is different. In nididhyasana, it's knowledge. You know that you know your atma, the atma. You recognize the truth of yourself, and you recognize that that is Brahman, which is Ishwara. That's knowledge. This ahangraha upasana is when you're sitting in meditation without self-knowledge, but remember that the conscious being that you are is in reality Brahman. But you don't know that. So you're just sitting as an upasaka. Upasaka means one is doing the meditation and you're saying, I am Shiva. And you imagine your being as Shiva. You imagine your being as Ishwara. Even though you don't, the difference is very close to Nididhyasana.
Shivoham.
Yeah, but if you say Shivoham,
mm-hmm.
from the standpoint of a jnani, you recognize the truth of the aham is Shiva,
mm-hmm.
is Ishwara. You recognize it. You recognize that your self is Brahman. And that's knowledge. So you don't have an ahankara. The ahankara now has recognized, right? The ahankara is mithya. You've now recognized that your being is Brahman. So in Nididhyasana you say, I am Brahman. It's not a superimposition. It's a recognition that the I is in fact Brahman. And that Brahman, you know, is Ishwara. So you can go do a whole meditation on I am Ishwara. That's not imagination. That is owning your knowledge, owning the truth of what you know. Whereas Ahangraha Upasana is where, as an Ajnani, right, who does meditation, you're sitting and now you say I, and the I is just your sense of me as the one who's meditating, I who am now meditating. This I, you imagine, I am Ishwara. And so you bring to your being, you let your being be Ishwara instead of being this body, mind, sense organs. You imagine your being, the I, as Ishwara. So that you imagine I, the ahankara, right, as to be Ishwara, or you imagine the ahankara as Shiva. And this body, mind, sense organs goes away. It's all that's left is the ahankara, and that ahankara is now filling the form of Shiva, or filling the form of Ishwara, instead of filling the form of the body, mind, sense organs. Like this body, mind, sense organs is replaced by Ishwara.
So, is that imagining yourself to be that deity,
yeah,
that you're looking?
Yeah, you imagine. See, when you say, like, say you say, just sitting with your eyes closed, you say, I am. And now instead of, I am this body, mind, sense organs,
mm-hmm.
you imagine this, I am Shiva. And so you keep the I am and put it into the form of Shiva. Or you keep the I am vritti, right, which you normally just, it's normally only in the form of your body, mind, sense organs.
Mm.
Now instead you keep this sense of I am and you imagine the form of Shiva. You imagine the form of Ganesha. You imagine the form of Ishwara.
And the body's gone. You're
because you're replacing that.
Yeah.
Instead of the ahankara landing on the body, mind, sense organs, you instead imagine this I in the form of, instead of in the form of Edward,
mm-hmm.
you imagine it in the form of Ishwara. Instead of imagining in the form of your body, mind, sense organs, this I am, you know, instead of saying, like if I say, you know, I am Radha, or I am, you know, I'll say, no, I am, take that same I am and imagine Ishwara. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an upasana. Whereas with Nididhyasana, it's different because already you've recognized the self that is the truth of the ahankara. Right? The ahankara becomes an ahankara because you've recognized the conscious me, the conscious being that illumines the ahankara and the mind and the sense organs. So in Nididhyasana, you're actually resolving the ahankara into Brahman. Right, you're resolving the, because of knowledge, you're resolving the ahankara into Brahman. And then you recognize, also because of knowledge, you recognize that this whole Maya Upadhi is just that, it's a Maya Upadhi that has for its being Brahman. And so in Nididhyasana, you're resolving the ahankara into yourself, into consciousness.
And yes, then you so can, you're not imagining yourself to be any kind of form or
Ishvara. No, you're resolving into mm-hmm. into the truth of yourself.
Okay.
And then you can even say, I am Ishvara. That's, you say, I am Ishvara, because of your knowledge, you recognize, I am nothing but this. But you have to be able to say that now. You have to be able to look at this creation and say, I am Ishvara. I am the truth of this. I am the self of all of this. I am the whole. And so then I can close my eyes in Nididhyasana and say, I am the whole, where I recognize that my being is the self of all, which is the truth. Right? Your being isn't an individual. Your being is the only being there is. And this being that you are is Ishvara from the standpoint of the Maya Upadhi. This body, mind, sense organs belongs to that Maya. You know, but you are the self of the Maya. So just like now, if you're looking out into this room, you know, that your body is included in the room, your sense organs included in the room, your thoughts included in the room. They're all objectified. That's all Ishvara. But yourself pervades all of that. Yourself is immanent and transcendent. Your being is immanent to everything that you see. Everything is known. Everything is. This is your being. And your being is free of all of this too. That's what we mean by immanent and transcendent. Right? You are the very truth of it all. Is you're not away from any of this. And you're not touched by any of it either. And so then when you're doing Nididhyasana, you're resolving your ahankara, your I notion, into the truth. Usually when you think of the ahankara, it's because it falsely identifies with what it is not. Whereas the aham, see, if we have the aham, the truth of the aham, the truth of I, it's atma. Right? So for the jnani, the ahankara is just totally mithya. But your jnanam resolves the aham, the I, the word I, into yourself, which is Brahman. That's the jnani. And so here, in these verses that we'll start on next week, this verse 8 and then 9, 10, 11, I think, Krishna's looking at these different types of upasana, that it can be also taken as Nididhyasana, in different ways of doing this resolution. We'll look at it both in terms of Nididhyasana and in terms of the ahankara upasana also.
Oh, good, wonderful.
Yeah, the upasana is good, especially when you're jnani. The upasana can't help but be Nididhyasana. Because you already know, you know, you already see it all as the Atma. You've already recognized the Atma, but still, it's really nice to kind of understand these two things. So let's stop here.
But if you think of Dakshinamurti as a Yani, mm-hmm. you can have that image and go over the image, but then that image keeps resolving into your own being.
Yeah. But because you know the truth of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We can still do upasana.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, legitimately do upasana.
Yeah.
You just know the different levels of it. That's all. Purnamidam Purnamidachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om